podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Security Now is provided by AOL Radio at AOL.com/podcasting. This is Security Now with Steve Gibson, episode 63 for October 26, 2006. Mojo Pack. It's time to say hello to Steve Gibson and another great Security Now. Hello, Steve. How are you?
Hey, Leo. Great to be back.
Fall has hit. I don't know about Irvine, but Petaluma, the leaves are starting to drop off the trees. It's really got a great fall feeling to it.
Well, you guys get a lot of rain up in Northern California, too.
We did. We got some rain, yeah. But it's been a little nippy, actually, so I think that's why. Warm during the days in the 70s, but at night getting a little chilly. I don't know why I'm giving you the weather forecast.
I don't know why we're giving 100,000 listeners the weather forecast.
that's one thing to give you the weather forecast. Maybe we should talk about security. What's up today?
Well, today we're going to talk about MojoPack.
MojoPack.
Last week I thought we were going to talk about MojoPack and U3 and something called Mocha 5, but in the interim, I've learned a lot about MojoPack. I did finally get a hold of the MojoPack people. Actually, the parent company is a company called RingCube. I had a conference call with the CTO, their chief technology officer, to get all of my deep techie questions answered. The problem I had was that their website is all about features and benefits. It's very sales and marketing, but as was always the case, I wanted to understand what they were actually doing, what was going on, underneath. What was the technology? Was this virtual machine technology, and how they'd implemented it and to what level? Because what that essentially, everything that it can do flows from the way it does what it does, of course.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody's seen the hype, or at least a lot of people have, and kind of taking it on face value, and of course that's why we're counting on you to tell us what's really going on, and if it really does what it says it does. We've heard some problems too. I've gotten some emails from companies who say our licenses didn't work once it was installed on MojoPack, things like that. So
well, and I can address that because now I understand by understanding the underlying technology, I understand why they've had those problems.
Aha.
And so as a result. And because U3 and Mocha 5 and a couple other portable app solutions are so different, we're just going to talk about MojoPack today. This will be the MojoPack episode, and then but the other things are also neat in a different way, and so we'll talk about those in future episodes of Security Now. In fact, I think near-term future episodes.
Well, this kind of follows on what we just finished, which is our virtualization series. So this is kind of another kind. It's not really virtualization, but it's something else, something related.
Well, yes. So here's the story. MojoPack is a cool thing. I've downloaded it. I've been playing with it for a few days, and there's a lot of good about it.
Mm-hmm.
But what it's doing is difficult to do. Essentially, it's not virtual machine technology as we've been talking about it at all. I don't want to say that it's rootkit technology because that has a negative connotation, but it's friendly rootkit technology.
Oh, interesting, huh?
What they're actually doing is they're installing a dynamic driver. So, jumping ahead a little bit, you are a MojoPack user. You've got this USB device, and that can either be a hard disk drive or a solid state, flash ROM dongle. You stick it in to an unsuspecting Windows XP machine that has never seen MojoPack before, has nothing Mojo-ish installed on it at the moment. And so what happens is the autostart.ini fires up if it's enabled on that Windows machine. So on that Windows XP machine, it's also important to say that this won't work on Windows 2000. This is an XP-only solution.
Okay.
So one issue is that, you know, power users may have disabled auto start, and there or you know, other systems may have it disabled for one reason or another. So you may have to manually run the start.exe program on your dongle or your drive if the hosting machine has auto start disabled. No big deal, but it's, you know, a little bit less automatic. In any event, when you run this start.exe, it essentially it dynamically loads a kernel driver into the system, which deeply hooks the Windows native API. We've talked about kernel.
Those are words that scare me when you say that.
I know, and in fact, I don't the other word I don't want to use to describe MojoPack is kludge, because kludge also has lots of negative connotations. But frankly, you know, a personal firewall, a third-party personal firewall, is also a kludge. Because, you know, it's doing something to Windows that Windows was never designed to have done to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why personal firewalls have caused problems for people. They've you know, conflicted with other applications, things break, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's doing something deeply to Windows in the kernel that Windows was never designed to accommodate. Well, MojoPack is doing the same thing, and so in that same sense, it's a kludge, but it's a kludge with benefits. I mean,
it's a kludge with power.
It's a kludge that you might want to have,
uh-huh.
You know, much like you want to have a personal firewall. So what happens is when you install MojoPack, there's no virtualization stuff going on. Basically, it reaches deeply into Windows and hooks the kernel, many of the kernel-level APIs.
See, already, this is making me very nervous.
Well, and I'm going to read you. I mean, I'm going to flesh out this opinion, which comes from the technology, with some real world examples of the consequences. So it makes these low level hooks, and this is the way.
You know, wait, before we go too far, I don't think we've really described. Have we described what it does? From the user's point of view.
Ah, very good point. Let me back up further. Yes.
We're talking about what it does from the technical point, but why are people so excited about this? What does it do for the user?
Okay, so what the experience I've had, which is why I started off saying this is a really cool thing, is I downloaded the MojoPack. The MojoPack XE. I installed it on a 512K dongle. Then I installed my favorite newsreader, Gravity, and I installed my favorite outlining tool, which is something called Thought Manager Desktop, because I love outlining. You know, I work from an outline every time I'm here in front of the microphone with you, Leo, because I've, you know, going through all the points I want to remember about what I'm talking. So, and then I imported all of my working outlines. I got online and I downloaded 3,000 news group messages from the GRC news server, all in this 512K dongle. Then I uninstalled, I shut down MojoPack and ejected the dongle, pulled it out, went over to another different Windows XP machine that had never seen any of this, stuck it in the USB port. MojoPack ran by itself, started up, brought me to a login dialog where I had to give it my password to log in. Then the normal desktop that I had been looking at on that Windows XP machine disappeared, was replaced by a brand new Windows desktop that looked just like what I had when I removed the dongle from the first machine, and there were in the standard Windows looking start button. I mean, it is the Windows start button and programs. There was my newsreader Gravity and my outlining Thought Manager, both running, and I mean able to run.
Wow.
I brought him up. There were all my postings. And so what it creates, basically, it allows you, through all of this work that these guys have done, to sort of have a portable Windows install of your own that can run off of any USB 2.0 device. So, for example, I mean, a cell phone that's got an additional memory card installed, or your iPod, or, you know, anything that is USB 2.0, you're able to install MojoPack and basically build yourself a your own portable Windows environment that is not just your data, but also your applications.
That's impressive.
Well, and that's the big difference, because, you know, certainly people have been able to, you know, synchronize their,
oh, yeah,
their data and like move PowerPoint files or
briefcase to that. I mean, that's no big deal.
Exactly. So the real difference here is you're able to install applications. Well, the way they've pulled this off, and it's important to note also, these are any applications. In a couple of weeks, we'll be talking about U3, which is sort of like this, but U3 takes a very different approach of creating an environment where applications have to be aware that they're running from a solid-state device. The MojoPack guys have basically, by deeply hooking the Windows kernel, they're basically simulating a standard Windows environment on a USB device.
Wow.
So the applications are none the wiser. Now, there are some caveats to that, because since they're not performing full virtualization, the applications may notice that they've been moved to a different machine. Now again, this is the kind of thing that can probably be, and in some cases definitely will be, fixed in the future. For example, users immediately noticed that the retail version of Office would, when they moved it to a foreign machine, they'd installed Office apps on their MojoPack USB device. When they moved it to another machine, it said, okay, you need to activate me. So Office deactivated because it saw that it had moved to a different platform. In a true virtual machine environment, as we know, the app can't know that it's on a different machine, because the entire environment has been virtualized. Here, MojoPack is doing what it needs to make the applications run. However, Mike, the CTO guy that I asked this question of, said in the next release of MojoPack, they will deal with making Office function universally.
Wow.
But this is sort of the way I want to characterize this. I want to characterize it carefully for people. My sense is that it's a quirky system, because what these guys are trying to do is difficult. In the same way that the very first personal firewalls were much more quirky than they are now.
Well, I think of things like Desk View and application switchers, where you're really trying to get into their hooks of the operating system and change how it behaves.
Yes.
You're just really taking some big chances.
Well, so let me give you some examples. For example, from their own knowledge base, they cannot install on a system where there are multiple, where you have a multi-boot operating system that's booting from drives other than C. You know that it is possible, for example, to have a C, D, and E partitions or drives, and have the OS actually installed on D or E or a non-C colon drive under Windows. MojoPack can't handle that. Another example is host machine screensaver and power management. They say that some failures have been observed when the host machine screensaver or power management options become active. Under printer drivers.
Oh, that's kind of a problem.
Oh, no, just wait, Leo. Sometimes, they're saying, kernel mode printer drivers will fail installation in the guest, that is, in the MojoPack guest. This includes programs that install their own virtual printer drivers, such as Adobe Acrobat.
Okay, so that doesn't work.
But it's important to know that Acrobat Reader does. It's just the it's the Acrobat Distiller, you know, Acrobat pseudo printer that can't. But then they say this limitation will be addressed in a future version. It says that
I bet they have a pretty long list of limitations to be addressed in future versions.
Well, yes. Let me go a little bit further here, just to sort of flesh out this notion. That under Complus applications, certain applications that require Complus may behave strangely or malfunction. Under the Recycle Bin, on some PCs, deleted folders may not appear in the guest after file/folder deletion. However, there may be items to empty in there. My own experience, I like to have auto-arrange turned on my desktop, and it's just not sticky. I keep turning it on as I move MojoPack from machine to machine, and it doesn't stay. Neither do the icon positions, because I like to sort of organize where things are, and it sort of forgets where they were previously. Under Word and Excel, they say that Excel docs containing a font symbol that was created on XP Pro Service Pack 2 showed the symbol as an unrecognizable value and opened on the guest plugged into host without MS Excel installed. They say you may see problems with Olay when opening docs with Office. Windows Media Player. Users are advised not to install Windows Media Player 11 within MojoPack, as it will lead to unpredictable behavior and recovery to the previous stable state may not be possible. Under reboots by third-party applications, reboots by third-party applications may not always work. The reboot is usually requested during the application install. And this goes on and on and on. Games, for example, one of the cool things you can imagine would be like a World of Warcraft addict wants to carry his whole World of Warcraft environment around with him so that he can go to a foreign machine, plug in, and just be up and running. Except that it says certain games, such as World of Warcraft, exhibit offset mouse movement at the end of install. In other words, clicking on a control, a Windows control, will not trigger the desired action. The user should move the mouse around the control to find the amount of offset from the mouse's visible and actual position. The mouse can... I know. I'm reading this going, oh my goodness. The mouse can then be moved to the offset location in order to activate the control. Note, this behavior does not occur when the user plays the game.
Oh.
So something about the game is causing the mouse's visible location and its effective location to be skewed. And so they say, well, sort of, you know, hover over things and see when they light up to figure out where the mouse actually is. So, and there's like a lot of these things. So this is why I have to kind of characterize this as a kludge, but I don't want to put people off of it because for most things, I think it really works. I mean, I don't actually have a need to move, you know, my newsreader and all of my newsgroups around and to do this kind of thing, but I'm sure there are people who have this kind of need, and it really does work. Now, what happens is when you are looking at the Mojo desktop, there's a bar at the top, the Mojo bar, that is unfortunately about the ugliest thing I have ever seen. I right-clicked on it, and there was a little pop-up saying, return to default skin. So I was like, oh, great, maybe I could, like, fix this. Well, this is actually reminiscent of Zone Alarm. Remember that Dayglow orange those Zone Alarm guys use? Well, I mean, I loved the firewall back in the beginning, but I used to tease them all the time about how horrible, you know, the horrible colors they had chosen for the UI. Well, the good news is, but apparently, this Mojo bar, their own toolbar, is skinnable, and I'm sure people are already hard at work in replacing the default skin, which is just god-awful looking. I mean, it just ruins the look of the rest of your system. But, you know, it does work, and it allows you to instantly, with a single click, to switch back and forth between your Mojo sized desktop and the desktop on the host. When you're looking from at the host view, you can see the Mojo drive, and you're able to copy any things that you want to it. Sort of from the host side, it looks just like a regular drive. They also provide a cool synchronization utility that allows you and offers to sort of like move your whole documents and setting tree over so that all of your settings and your whole My Documents group are moved over. So that's very, it makes it very easy to synchronize and to set things up over there. One of the things you cannot do is, and this is the one of the most often requested things that they are never going to address, is you cannot simply move pre-installed applications from your host machine into the Mojo environment. And this is deliberate on their part. Also, it's very difficult to do, as we know, because it's very difficult to move an already installed app to, you know, anywhere, because apps can do so much to the system when they install themselves. But these guys recognize that they have, in creating this notion of mobile applications, they've really turned the software licensing model upside down, I mean, on its head. Because if you look at the EULAs, the end user license agreements, in virtually anything you install, it says, this is for use on one single computer. Now, I talked to them about this explicitly, and they said, well, you know, actually, we looked at a lot of EULAs. Many of them say on two, you can do two installs because they want to be laptop friendly. They want to allow people to install on their main workstation and also on a laptop. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt on that. The EULAs I have seen tend to say only use this on one machine. So inherently, this is a multi-machine install. You are installing the application that the EULA says you can only run in one location. You're installing it on an inherently portable device. You know, my feeling is you make one installation of the app. You are carrying it around. You're the only one using it. I would say, even though it might be outside the letter of what the EULA was written to say, the EULA wasn't written with Mojo in mind. So, you know, I wouldn't consider that a big breach of the publisher's license. However, this is why the Mojo Pack guys want to be very clear that when you install Mojo Pack from the start, basically you start off with what looks like an empty Windows system. It uses Windows profiles. Basically, it creates a mobile user profile on the Mojo Pack device, and you end up looking at, you know, a virgin Windows desktop with a start button and nothing in the programs group, and you must then manually reinstall any things from scratch that you want to have on your Mojo Pack and be portable. The Mojo Pack guys feel that this deals with the upside down nature of portable licensing in a good way, because basically they're saying users are being given the responsibility of installing or reinstalling existing applications if they want them to be portable, rather than, for example, Mojo Pack just cloning them somehow into this portable device, which they're explicitly not willing to do. So you know, that's sort of the gist of this thing. It's a small download. It's only about a 9 meg download. It's not currently digitally signed, which is a point I brought up to them, and they said, yes, we know that. We're going to fix that, because, of course, now Windows and certainly Internet Explorer is becoming increasingly reactionary to the idea of not having of users running non-signed things that they've just downloaded from the Internet. You get all kinds of unknown publishers and are you really sure you want to do this kinds of messages. The release price was basically half price, $24.99. It is going up to $49.99, that is to say $50, in just 3 weeks. I think that's a mistake. On Thursday, exactly 3 weeks from today, Leo, Thursday, November 16th, the registered price of Mojo Pack doubles up to $50. I really think they should, given that they've still got so many little bits of debris to work out, my advice would be, what's the hurry? You know, extend this special offer time another couple months, especially since they had a bunch of problems when they came out of the gate, you know, taking it out of beta. I really think this is a much too narrow window. I guess it's really only been about a one-month window before they jumped the price up. As I understand it, they're venture finance, so they shouldn't have cash flow problems, and I would encourage people to play with this. The way it works without registration is you get 30 days of use or 200 boots, and they doubled that number of boots recently because people were running dry well before their 30 days were up. They only had 100 boots before. That is actually 100 stick the Mojo packs in a computer is what's called a boot. And so, you know, I've already used up 15 of mine just moving it around in a couple days, you know, playing with it. So if people think this might be something they're interested in messing with, you've got 3 weeks before the price doubles. The other good news is, you know, I'm very sensitive to things impacting my system. You know, I didn't like installing, you know, VMware on test machines or like messing with virtual PC and these other things, because I mean these whacked your machine. Mojo Pack doesn't. As far as I can see, it makes zero change to the machine on which you download their XE and where you install Mojo Pack, and that's all part of their philosophy. When you shut down Mojo Pack and remove it from a machine, their dynamic device driver unloads the machine that host where you were that you were temporarily visiting, and basically using its resources, its network and processing and screen and other resources, it ends up not knowing anything has happened. And that's the magic of their kernel level hooks. The apps running in Mojo Pack see a C drive, but the C drive is the actual Mojo Pack device remapped to C, and the actual host C drive is not available. It is inaccessible. So there's no changes being made to the registry. There's no debris left behind, no browser settings, no trail of URLs you visited. Nothing changes on the host. And so from a security standpoint, this is one of the main advantages that they were going for, and this is unique among these other solutions. We know, for example, they're sandboxy, and there are, you know, full robust VM solutions, but any VM solution is inherently going to seriously sit on the machine you install it on. So in that sense, Mojo Pack is very lightweight. I have to say, I like it. I would encourage people not to be put off by, you know, their list of knowledge base. Yes, we know we have these problems. I mean, I found some myself. Right-clicking on Network Neighborhood, which is now renamed My Network Places under XP, nothing comes up. I right-click and do Properties. I can't get Properties. I thought, okay, well, you know, what's going on? So I clicked the Mojo bar at the top, instantly switched back to the host, right-clicked on I forgot what it's called now. Network Neighborhood or My Network Things and
my,
the dialogue.
My Network Things is good. I like that. I'm going to recommend that for Vista. Yeah.
and everything was as I remembered it. Back over to Mojo, and that just doesn't work.
Yeah.
So it was like, okay, add that to the list. So the point is, what they're doing is something Windows was never designed to have done to it. And frankly, if this is such a cool idea, as long as we sort of tolerate the question of mobile licenses, which is still a little bit up in the air, in my opinion, but the idea is so cool, you can imagine that in some future version of Windows that, you know, this won't be something Windows fights, it'll be something Microsoft acquires, much as Microsoft finally added a personal firewall to XP, you know, several years after everybody else had gotten bloodied on the battlefield developing the technology. I could easily imagine that this kind of portable application stuff is so cool that it ends up ultimately, you know, generations from now appearing in Windows, but it's available today.
I might just point out that the Apple's had this for about 10 years, but okay.
Thank you, Lee.
Actually, it's not. That's really not fair. In fact, it may even exist for Windows, but Apple networking can be set up so that no matter where you are in the network, when you log into your network, it's your desktop, your preferences, your applications.
Okay, well, now Windows has that, too. It's called a roaming profile.
Roaming profile, right. So,
yes, and so
this is not quite that, but this allows you to do kind of a roaming profile, right?
Well, this is way more than that, because the roaming profile doesn't provide you any of the encapsulation that MojoPack does. I mean, remember, you could literally install Firefox. They've got problems with IE7 right now.
I may be wrong, but I think the Apple one does do that. But I may be wrong on that.
Provides real security encapsulation?
Yeah, basically everything's all kind of packaged up.
Well, okay, but I guess...
I don't know.
Sure,
that's a good question. I don't
there's
know.
There's no access to the host. Because you know...
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yes.
No, I think you probably would access the host. I think it's probably all living on the host.
Yes, and so that's my point, is that what
I
Apple
see.
Has
you're
done...
You're taking it with you. It's completely portable. Right.
Well, but not only portable, and again, I want to make sure we make this point, it's encapsulated. That is to say, when you install your MojoPack device into the machine, it brings up the MojoPack desktop into which you log in, and you have no access to the normal host's resources. You cannot get to the hard drive. You cannot get to... You're able to access removable media. You can see the host CD-ROM and DVD and other USB devices, but basically you're only able to see those things which the MojoPack guys allow you to see. It's also important to note that you do have to be logged in as an admin user, a full-strength user on the host. They have provisions which they will be making available to universities, because you can imagine in a university setting, all the university students could have MojoPack, you know, and dongles around their neck, and they go to bolted down limited user XP systems, stick in their dongle, and now they've got access to, you know, their own portable environment. And so there is a way that that MojoPack can run as an admin user on top of a limited user host, but that's not the normal retail version. That's not what people can buy right now. Right now, you do have the host that you stick your MojoPack into needs to be running as an admin in order for MojoPack to install itself and make itself go. Because, again, it's installing a dynamic, very low-level kernel driver in order to perform all of this, all these modifications to Windows. It's also worth noting that there are sort of two profiles that have sort of surfaced for MojoPack users. The people at RingCube who did MojoPack all literally use MojoPack as their single environment. They use small USB 2 hard drives as opposed to solid-state drives, and they have installed all of the applications they use. I mean, basically, their entire PC is installed in a MojoPack drive. And so what they have when they come to work is literally an empty Windows XP machine. It's just, it got a generic install. It's sitting there with nothing on it. They come to work in the morning, plug their drive in, bang, they're looking at their desktop exactly as they left it at home, because they've done the same thing at home. They've got a generic Windows XP install at home, and when they come back from work, they plug their drive in, and their whole environment is portable and has moved with them, including all the applications that they have installed. So you have this sort of this high-end whole environment portability user, where for example, the relatively limited size of a USB dongle, which is practically 4 gig, maybe 8 gig today, and the somewhat lower performance of a flash ROM device, may not be enough for that kind of a user. So you use a small, lightweight, portable USB drive. Then you've got somebody like I was pretending to be a couple days ago, where I really wanted something in my pocket or on my keychain, and that's entirely practical. There have been some postings on the net about slow performance problems with MojoPack. I don't see that at all. As far as I could see, I was using a good SanDisk 512K high-speed USB device, but I downloaded 3,500 newsgroup messages just as fast as I would have on a regular PC. They claim about a 5% overhead of their system, which is very low for this kind of work, but it's really not doing much. It's just filtering at the kernel API in order to sort of mutate the Windows environment in order to MojoPackize the host machine, to hide the hard drive, to allow you to get access to the networking layers and so forth, and basically to provide this MojoPack desktop. Another example of sort of the kludgeness of this is if a personal firewall pops up a message, it pops up on the underlying host desktop and you can't see it. So to get around this, the MojoPack guys are watching for anything popping up on the desktop underneath, and then will provide you with a notice that something has popped up on the host desktop, which requires you to click the Mojo bar, flip over to the host, and see what's going on. One of the other errata is that if a personal firewall blocks something that you're doing in the Mojo environment, you may need to go back to the host and to permit the application, which is running on Mojo, to go through. Again, these are consequences of the fact that Windows was never designed to have this done. It's a testament, the fact that these guys are able to do it at all is a testament to their courage and fortitude and the fact that they had a really cool idea, which I'm sure is going to be evolving and improving and getting better over time as they work out all of these sorts of, dust and debris, much as I remember personal firewalls being in the beginning, and now they're much more solid. So again, I don't want to put people off, neither do I want to oversell this. And the reason I think that this evaluation period is critical is people ought to give it a try. It is, everyone who sees it says, whoa, this is so cool. And I feel that way too. If my life were such that I was ever away from here and I wanted to carry an executable Windows environment with me, and I knew that there would be available admin privileged Windows XP machines wherever I was going to need to do something, and I'm carrying all my data, it is a really a cool solution, and it works, but it can be quirky for specific things, so you'd want to make sure, for example, if you were someone who needed to use Adobe Acrobat's PDF creation capabilities, that's just not working under MojoPack today, because it's something that you can imagine they will probably get around to dealing with at some point. Thus, my sense is that this is going to keep getting better and better. Also, relative to licensing, you've got this 30 days or 200 boots, and then you've got to buy it. And don't forget that from the time people are hearing this, there's a 3-week window during which buying it is $24.99 versus twice the price at $49.99. So keep that in mind too. Once you have bought it, there is the ability to migrate your MojoPack from one device to another. They only run on USB 2.0 because USB 2.0 spec requires a unique serial number on every device. So they're locking their license to it. When you download this 9 meg MojoPack install and do your install, you create an account over on the MojoPack site, a username and password on the MojoPack site, and you use that same username and password in order to subsequently access your device, although you're able to change the password. And in fact, I think they prompt you to change the password the very first time you use this. So you've installed one instance of MojoPack on one device. If you outgrow that, or you decide you want to try a faster USB, or you want to move over to a hard drive, or do whatever you want to, they provide the facility for deregistering the current MojoPack install and copying it over to another device and re-registering it there. So you are able to migrate your purchased MojoPack to USB devices virtually unlimited. I think there actually is a high limit because they do want to prevent fraud, you know, some style of fraud from occurring, but basically it would never be something that would impede MojoPack's users.
I think, though, I mean, it's something that really should be done at the operating system level. It just doesn't seem like an independent software vendor has a chance of making this thing work. I mean, Microsoft changes one thing, the whole thing collapses.
Well, that level of kernel API is pretty stable. I asked them about Vista, because, of course, Vista, as we know, is very hostile to anyone mucking
right.
around down in its innards. And they claim that they have it running on, I'm sure, the 32-bit beta of Vista. I think it's running under RC2. And again, the kernel API is a well-documented, well-structured, well-understood API.
All right, so this is an accepted thing to do.
Yes, well, I don't know what they're going to do under the 64-bit version of Vista in the same way that McAfee and Symantec
right.
are frozen out from going in and mucking around. I have to imagine that MojoPack would be similarly prohibited until, as Microsoft has said, with Service Pack 1 of Vista, the 64-bit Vista, then they will provide an API. But that's apparently only a monitoring API. That's probably enough for Symantec and McAfee. It may not be enough. So it may be. I mean, this is another example of why, reluctant as I am to call this a kludge, that's the word for it,
okay.
because they just may never be able to do this under the 64-bit version of Vista, because Vista won't let you go in and do this, because, again, as I said, it's rootkit-ish behavior, and Vista 64-bit is specifically anti-rootkit.
Right.
But Leo, really, I mean, you ought to try it. I'm encouraging people with all these caveats.
I'm so reluctant to try it, Steve. How do you get this thing off of your system? Do you think it uninstalls cleanly?
No, it's never on your system.
It's never on your system.
No, that's what's so nice, is you download the 9 megs, you give it a USB device. Now, they suggest...
So wait a minute. It only modifies your system in memory on the fly. It never changes your operating system?
Correct. It doesn't change the OS. You originally install it, you install the MojoPack onto, nor does it ever change anything.
Okay.
About a guest operating system. I mean that part I'm really clear about, and
right.
it's why, again, it's you know, I know I've been I've thrown up all these caveats, but it actually does work.
If it doesn't modify my system, well, of course I'll try it. Why not?
Yeah. Well, and as I said, you know, installing VMware is a horrifying thing. I mean, it creates virtual adapters.
Right.
It's got stuff running constantly in the background. It's got services running. It's all this stuff. You know, VMware doesn't. MojoPack does not do this. Nothing on the system where I originally installed it. I mean, nothing was even installed there. The little 9 meg installer just found my USB device, asked me to choose which one I wanted to install it to, and it moved itself over there. Nothing changed on my host system. Then, when you install it and you plug it into guest systems, it just dynamically loads this driver in RAM. Nothing is written to the hard drive. Your Mojo view has no access to the registry, to the hard drive, or anything, so that anything you do is encapsulated, and there's nothing to uninstall, because it's never installed. I mean, it is, again, I think these guys are in, you know, the first phase of a very cool thing, and that a year from now, 2 years from now, we're going to look back at this, you know, at episode 63 of Security Now and go, well, you know, we were right. This thing had all kinds of wacky behavior.
I'm gonna make you a deal. They're gonna say Steve was right. Leah was full of it because I don't think this is ever gonna happen. And I think really, if it does, it should happen at the operating system level. But all right, if you think
no. Now, Leo, I'm not saying I disagree with you, except we don't have it available.
Microsoft's not doing it. Yeah, Microsoft's not doing it.
And it's gonna take them generations. You know, Vista's already done, so it's not gonna be in Vista. This is not something I could see them adding in a service pack, so it's going to have to be in Wista or, you know, whatever comes after Vista. And, you know, and that's going to be a long time.
Right.
So, you know, no one should hold out hope for this happening sooner.
No, I understand that. I understand that.
But I agree with you. I mean, in the same way that I think a personal firewall should be in the OS because, you know, that's the right place for it. You know, this notion of application portability, installing normal hard disk targeted apps in a portable device, this is a cool thing. When people see this, this is cool. I mean, and the MojoPack guys have done, as I said, they had a lot of guts, and they've tackled something which is fundamentally hostile to Windows, but they're making it work. And so, again, because it's a small download, you get 30 days to play with it, it won't screw up your system, it won't modify any guest systems, and it does allow you to have to take normal, regular, non-special Windows applications and run them on a portable device, and then it's really portable, and it creates privacy and security encapsulation for what you're doing on the MojoPack, as I think I heard them say when we were talking on the phone, you know, what happens in MojoPack stays in MojoPack. I mean, it is very cool. It's just it was a huge challenge to do this. I
give them props as hackers. Absolutely, I give them props.
Absolutely, I salute them and tip my hat. I mean, this is a very valuable thing. That you know, and I'm feeling again. $50 seems like a lot of money. On the other hand, I'm charging $89 for my software. So who am I to talk? But but it does allow you to move around your purchased MojoPack from device to device. They suggest, and this is all in the README file that I do encourage people to read. They suggest, for example, that if you can, you reformat your dongle to NTFS rather than the default, which will be a FAT or FAT32 file system. Mm. Obviously, people who are using an iPod can't. They're not able to reformat. They're going to have to leave it in its default FAT format because they still want to be able to use their iPod, you know, on a Mac, I guess, or on, you know, in the way they normally do. So they're not able to change that to NTFS. But if you did have a standalone drive or a USB device, which you're able to use with NTFS, they're just saying security is better and it is faster than FAT. Oh, and I forgot to mention that something that they did broke compatibility with TrueCrypt. I was concerned.
Oh, boy, now I've
No, slow down, slow down. I was concerned about that, so I asked them. They recognize they broke it. They've come up with a temporary workaround that allows TrueCrypt to be used, and the next release will be completely TrueCrypt-friendly. So our favorite ultra-robust security tool can also be used with MojoPack in order to allow a TrueCrypt volume to be carried and to have to and where TrueCrypt is running on MojoPack, no longer do you need to install TrueCrypt on the target system. So that's even better than running TrueCrypt by itself, because if you had TrueCrypted a dongle or a drive, you would need to install TrueCrypt on the host machine in order to then have portable access. Here, TrueCrypt is running in MojoPack, giving you access to your TrueCrypt partition or directories. So, I mean, in some sense, it's even better than TrueCrypt without MojoPack. And these, I mean, they're committed to the issue of security and privacy, so they're going to make it work. I mean, even better than it does now, and it does work now, although you need to do some workaround.
You might. I mean, if all you really need is email and browsing, there are USB versions of Firefox and of Thunderbird and so forth that you can carry on a USB key. It keeps all your stuff on the key. It doesn't have the same kind of encapsulation you're talking about, but you can do that.
Well, that's absolutely true. And in fact, U3, which we'll be talking about in the future, is a specific platform for running things from Flash. The real advantage of MojoPack is encapsulation, because Firefox won't give you this kind of robust encapsulation. If you did get something, a virus or something, in Firefox running from a dongle, it would still have access to your C drive. And so, again, I mean, there are real benefits to what the MojoPack guys have done that, as far as I know, are unique. It's true that if you were carrying a virtual machine around in your dongle and you knew that you had VMware or Parallels installed in any host machine, you could simply launch your VM and then operate. But that requires a serious hit to the hosting platform. MojoPack doesn't hit the hosting platform at all.
Is Flash fast enough to do this? I mean, you're running stuff not off the hard drive, but off the Flash.
Well, you are, but the way Windows operates, first of all, Flash reads at about twice the speed that it writes. Another concern is that Flash has a write limit. The actual chemical technology of the non-volatility of a flash has a maximum of about 100,000 write cycles. So, for example, people who arrange like flash booting Linux systems. I have myself a flash booting FreeBSD system that I built. I had to go to some lengths to not have a swapping partition on the flash, and in fact to make sure that I was that I was mounting my flash partitions in read-only mode so that the system would be logging to RAM and not to flash, because you never want a situation where by default you're writing often and hard to your flash, because it will end of life that device very quickly. Mark Thompson actually did some experiments where he burned out a flash in a couple of days.
Wow.
Just by booting a standard Windows system, and Windows just thrashed the thing and killed it. And
well, the good news is now that flash is at least fairly cheap, so you might use it for 6 months and have to buy a new one.
Well, I asked this question of the MojoPack guys. They've been using MojoPack for 6 months, many of them on flash devices, and actually they've been testing it and pounding on it and using it like crazy. Not a single one of theirs has ever died.
Ah, that's good.
I would encourage people not to use bargain basement, you know, cash register, oh, here's a $15, you know, half a gig flash that you can get at the checkout stand. By all means, stay with you know, Lexar or SanDisk or a high end.
Is there really a difference?
Flash. I really think there is.
Yeah,
I mean, certainly in performance too, because in order to get accelerated performance, what they're doing is they're writing in parallel to many more flash devices inside in order to get multiples of write speed. And there's also something called write leveling, which expensive flash has and cheapo flash doesn't. What write leveling does is it actually distributes the write so that even though you appear to be writing to the same logical location in the flash, it's actually the flash itself is writing and doing sort of the equivalent of sector swapping on a hard drive. It's actually writing to other physical areas, which are then read back from that area in sort of in a content addressable scenario. So the idea is, it means that if you were only using part of your flash and, like, you know, recording pictures, deleting them, recording them, deleting them, recording them, deleting them, and, like, never filling up your flash, if on a normal fat file system, that would end up burning out the front of the file system way before the end.
You never write to the end.
So basically, you end up killing this thing way before you need to. But the higher quality flash has write leveling built in, so it's automatically distributing those writes across the entire physical surface of the drive. So it's really worth doing that. These, of course, are not problems for an actual little USB 2.0 hard drive.
Those little drives you can get, yeah.
Now, one other thing they recommend, that is MojoPack recommends, is that the first time, if you're concerned about performance or if it seems sluggish, I saw no sluggishness at all in my case. I mean, literally, I'm totally happy using this thing for like mail, web browsing, news groups. For example, with a newsreader in particular, you really want to carry your whole environment around because it's all the messages that you've already read and all the messages that have occurred so that conversation threading works correctly. So there, I mean, it's not the same as going and doing like a web-based read of a forum where it is all being kept over on the server side. But I mean, I was completely happy with the performance of this thing. However, by default, Microsoft Windows turns off write caching for USB devices. The reason is, if someone yanked it out of the of the connection, you might well have what's called a dirty cache in Windows, where it has been deliberately buffering writes so as not to redundantly write to the device, and also so as not to incur the performance penalty of doing so. So what happens is Windows realizes this is a USB device, and it will turn off write caching. You can go in to, you know, right click on My Computer, go to Manage, go to find the USB device, select the properties of it, and they explain this in the Mojo README, exactly what the path of clicks is to get there, and then you deliberately turn on delayed writing. That means you need to shut down MojoPack through the UI and not just yank it out. But, of course, most users know now they really ought to do a smooth shutdown of a USB drive anyway.
Oh, really?
I
didn't know that. I thought Windows just kind of, you know, it handled it, so I just pulled it out.
Well, under Windows 2000...
Well, 2000 you have to do it, but under XP you don't.
Well, no, and the reason you don't is Windows is still trying to flush it. However, if you've ever done a large file copy, even under XP, the file copy dialog will finish, and if you've got a light showing access to the device, it'll sit there and flash sometimes for 30 minutes. Because Windows has flushed everything out of its upper UI level, but the kernel is still trying to write to an inherently slow writable device, which is what USB flash is. So you really need to wait, and what you should do is right click on the drive appearance in Explorer and then select eject and wait for the eject to complete, and then it's safe to remove. So anyway, my point is that if another sort of a power user trick is you could disable enable write caching, which is not the default setting for a USB portable device, because Microsoft wants to keep the caches flushed and keep the drive current in case somebody yanks it out without shutting it down. I actually didn't bother with that, and I just saw no performance penalty. I'm really pleased with this. So again, I want to make sure people understand this is, you know, version 1.0. Actually, it's 1.0.1 at the moment. I believe this thing has a future. I think people are right to be excited about it, and it offers a lot of features. The only caveat being, you know, Windows wasn't designed this way. And so these guys have had to do deep hooks into the kernel in order to pull this off. But I think for most people they have, and it'll only be some people who have problems. So again, use that 30-day eval or your 200 boots, you know, as quickly as you can within that period. Figure out if the things that you think you want to do work without any trouble. And if so, you know, then I think it's a great solution for you.
Very good. I mean, obviously, these guys are filling a perceived need. There's no question about that. And they're amazing hackers. And since it doesn't in any way impinge on your system, why not try it out? Why not give it a shot?
Yeah, again, it's small and lightweight, doesn't affect your system, and it's, you know, seeing it work is to believe it, Leo. Your attitude, I mean, my attitude changed.
Well, I've tried it. I mean, I have seen it work.
Okay.
Yeah, we tried it at a call for help, actually. Callie demonstrated it. And it was impressive. It just makes me nervous. MOJOPAC.com. And as Steve said, you can try it for free. You know, we've been talking about a free trial version of SpinRite for some time. I think you've really got to try that. You've got to do that.
I don't know how I would do that. As I said to you before, Leo, you know, we offer it with a complete money-back guarantee.
I think that's the best way to do it.
Well, and because the fact is, the first time you use it, you get tremendous benefit from
right.
it. It's not an it's not a productivity application like
right.
Word
right.
or something else where it's like, okay, do I really want to keep using it after 30 days? In fact, we received a nice note from a Security Now listener just this week. He said, I just wanted to give you some more feedback on SpinRite. I've been listening to Security Now since some of the earliest episodes, and I've been thinking about getting a copy of SpinRite. Well, I had just the right opportunity this past weekend. A friend's computer started refusing to boot into Windows XP, and I took a good look at it and found the Mac Store hard drive was going bad, very bad.
Uh-oh.
He had over 8 gigs of digital photos on it that he absolutely did not want to lose, and I was having very little luck trying to copy the files off of it. So, I got a copy of SpinRite and ran it, get this, for 2.5 days straight.
Oh, my God. See, I think sometimes people give up because they don't realize it could take that long.
Well, he says he ran it for 2.5 days straight until we had a power outage.
Oh, no.
It's like, okay. He said, after that, I decided to see what I could recover, and I was able to easily recover all the photos. It
wow.
worked great. So,
did you design it to handle a power outage like that? I mean, it fails gracefully like that?
It fails gracefully. That was something that was tested extensively back in the SpinRite 1.0 days. And, you know, I put in the technology to make it do the right thing. And, you know, 2.5 days is extreme. You know, many people talk about it running on 250 gig drives in a few hours, which it's certainly able to do. But, you know, what happens is, I mean, SpinRite is really doing hard work.
It had to do a lot on that drive.
And when you compare this to taking the drive out and sending it somewhere,
right.
2.5 days is much less time than waiting multiple weeks to have some data recovery company fix it for you for way more than $89.
Very impressive. SpinRite. It's at grc.com. And if you want to see more testimonials, it's spinrite.info. And, of course, GRC.com is a place to go for 16 kilobit versions of this for the Bandwidth Challenged. Also, Elaine's great transcriptions. She does those just for you because I know sometimes it's hard to follow. But you can read along as you listen. Again, GRC.com. Visit twit.tv. We have an episode guide going back, just as Steve does, going back all the way to the very first episode so you can see what you've missed. And a lot of people download these shows much later. I think it's the kind of thing people collect, and they want the whole set.
I get postings from people all the time saying that they just discovered us and they've been listening to all the back episodes.
Yeah.
So I'm really happy that we have that
on. No, it's a good thing. It's absolutely a good thing to have. If you like Security Now, you might like Windows Weekly. It's another podcast, this time about Windows with Paul Thurrott. Very similar style. Paul is a great Windows expert, and we talk about not specifically security, but just Windows Vista and Microsoft and what they're up to. And, of course, that's getting very interesting. Right now. That's also available at twit.tv. Your support is much appreciated. You know, we've had advertising for some time, but as the advertising came on the show, the donations dwindled. that's kind of bad news because, frankly, the donations pay for the infrastructure. The advertising only pays salaries. So you're $2 a month. If you like, somebody asked me, well, I like this show, but I don't like that show. Can I just donate to this show? Yeah, just, you know, put in your note when you donate the $2, say it's for Steve. That's fine. And I'll make sure that it only pays for the bandwidth that Steve uses. Or something.
I think I use a lot of bandwidth.
I think you do. I think you do. Steve, next week we are going to do questions and answers.
Episode 64, one of my favorite numbers being that it's a power of two as well.
Oh, yeah. You know, when my son was like 6 or 7, he said, listen, Daddy, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64, 128, 256, 1,024, 5, 12, 1,000. And I went, wow. Henry, you're going to be good at computers. He said,
Oh, yeah.
He goes all the way up to, he was at that time going to 4,096. I was impressed. I thought, This guy's got a binary brain. He's only shown aptitude as so far for YouTube videos, though, so I don't know. Maybe it was just...
You know, just to entertain myself, Leo, I used to practice seeing how far up I can go.
Really?
It's pretty scary.
How high can you get up to 4 million, it gets a little, or 4 billion, it gets a little tough after that.
I had it memorized up to like 10 or 11 places, I think.
Wow.
I mean, decimal digits. Just, wow. You know, it's like, you know, some people memorize pi, I memorize powers of two. So
maybe he's a little budding Steve Gibson. We thank you for joining us. We'll see you next Thursday and every Thursday on twit.tv for Security Now. See you, Steve.
See you, Leo.
Security Now.